disclaimers. This doesn't really reflect anything like the abstract that I submitted back in February. And of course, I'd be deceiving you if I did. I mean, I've been working on this since February. So this kind of represents my current state of the knowledge. And I guess, by extension, it's still a work in progress. So I still don't have the answers to the questions I was seeking when I wrote the abstract back in February. But at least this is where I currently stand on this. Let me just give you the outline for this talk. We're going to talk a little bit about injury rates and how they violate the property of statistical independence. And then I'm going to be referring a lot to this rather peculiarly named thing called overdispersion. We'll talk a bit about that. And then I want to introduce the negative binomial distribution and a regression model based on negative binomial. And then at that point, we actually get to something useful, which is the example, and my example comes from the NCAA injury surveillance system. So, in injury surveillance data, we often want to compute incidence rates or injury rates. And statistically, the assumption when you make a confidence interval about that rate is that it follows a Poisson distribution. Let me just say what I mean by a rate. A rate measures the incidence of fatalities or non-fatal injuries per units of person time. So a rate would be 23 suicides per 100,000 population at risk, would be an example of a rate. Another example of a rate would be 160 motor vehicle deaths per 100,000 miles traveled. That would be, those are both things where we're quantifying incidents in units that are based around the epidemiologic concept of person time. In my example, the denominator is going to be measured in athlete exposures rather than miles or people, but we'll come to that in a bit. So when we construct confidence intervals about these rates, as I say, we invoke this Poisson assumption. But, this assumption is not very well justified, as people have been pointing out for a couple of years now. So it's not very justified if there are multiple injuries stemming from the same event. So an example of that is an intimate partner, spouse, homicide, suicide, where one partner kills another and then kills himself. That's two fatalities from one event. So they're clearly not statistically independent anymore. Likewise, multiple fatalities in a car crash is another example of that. In the NCAA data, we have lots of this going on because we have divisions and then conferences within divisions and then schools within conferences and then athletes within, or teams within schools and athletes within teams and multiple injuries within athletes. So there's multiple levels of hierarchy, and in the NCAA data, this assumption of Poisson independence or statistical independence of events is violated at multiple levels. So, my kind of like hobby research project, apart from, I know you're all saying, get a life, but my hobby research project was the negative binomial a more realistic model for this than the standard Poisson model? The thing that led me into this was this problem of overdispersion. Overdispersion is caused by positive correlation. So if one team, just trying to take out the microphone here to keep you all awake. If within a team, a sports team, there's a certain positive correlation in the injury count, right? Which we don't know exactly what induces that. It may be playing surface, it may be conditioning, it may be coaching factors, but we certainly observe it, right? And so this induces variance in the data more than you would expect under a Poisson distribution. So we call that extra Poisson variation. But if statisticians called it extra Poisson variation, we would know what it was. So we have to mystify it with a bizarre label. So the bizarre label that's been selected is overdispersion. And the effect of these labels is to create a power structure within statistics and prevent practitioners from understanding what's going on. It's, It's the same thing in tribal religion, by the way. Seriously, overdispersion is a lousy name for this. It should be called extraneous song variation. So my rule of thumb, which is completely unvalidated and I take no responsibility for it, is that, and this is a model-based rule, but in a regression model like Poisson regression, if I have a Pearson chi-square divided by its degrees of freedom that's over 1.5, then I usually am getting worried about overdispersion. That means my model here is a bad fit to my data at that point. Like I say, I take no responsibilities for that rule of thumb. The effect of that is that the standard errors from your model are going to be way too small. So your confidence intervals will be incorrectly narrow. Okay, so I went too far, just waiting for this to catch up. Let me say a few words about Poisson regression. I think that's the slide I'm supposed to be on. The Poisson regression model, I'm sort of assuming people have some familiarity with it, but let me briefly describe it. I think we all know what linear regression is, right? It's, you know, y regressed against x with an error term thrown into the model. So in Poisson regression, it's the same idea, except that the y are the log injury rates. It's a log transformation of the injury rates, and the error term, instead of being a normal distribution, has a Poisson distribution. But apart from that, Poisson regression is basically just linear regression with a log transform of the injury rate used as the outcome and the Poisson distribution used as an error distribution. This is a pretty common model for modeling rates now. So my problem here is that that model is underestimating the variance, the true variance of the rates. So here are three workarounds. Workaround number one is to actually patch the model up after the fact, right? And this seems like it would be the stupidest and most arcane piece of butchery you would want to entertain. As we'll see, it actually works very well. So all we do in this is fit the regular model, acknowledge that it's the variance, the standard errors from it are too low, get an estimate of how low they are, which is provided by the model, and then scale them up. And in SAS, you can do this with GenMod if you invoke pscale or descale options, and in Stata, you use XT Poisson and invoke scale chi-square or X. Okay, so that's patch-up approach to it. A better approach to it is to look at negative binomial regression. Actually, let me go to the next one. Is to look at negative binomial. And there's two negative binomial models that are commonly used. This one is NB1. And in this model, instead of patching it after the fact, we actually estimate an over-dispersion parameter, which is called alpha, because if we called it the over-dispersion parameter, everyone would know what it was. To cloak it in a mystique of secrecy, we call it alpha. And we estimate that as part of the model fitting process. It's actually part of the model. And so this seems much more satisfying and elegant statistically because we're not just patching up afterwards, we're doing it as part of the model. In the NB1 model, this is just a linear function of the mean, and we rescale using this linear function. And in SAS, you can do this in prop count reg, and in Stata, NBReg does this. An alternative to NB1 is NB2, and NB2 is the same idea, except we use a quadratic function of the mean to estimate the amount of overdispersion. So NB1 uses a linear function of the mean as the alpha, or overdispersion parameter. NB2 uses a quadratic function of the mean as the overdispersion parameter. And you can go on, and you can have NBN, as many models, variants of this model as you want. And in SAS, this is what ProcGenMod does. When you tell ProcGenMod to fit an error distribution that's negative binomial, it's fitting NB2. It took me days just to figure out what it was doing. Okay, so why would I be entertaining this idea in the first place? So if you remember back to the painful days of statistics 101, you might recall this thing called the binomial distribution. The binomial distribution predicts for a trial, a Bernoulli trial, which is like tossing a coin, the number of successes, which is defined as getting a hit. I don't know why, it's anti-Taylorism. So, for example, if you have, if you toss a fair coin six times, right, then your n would be six. And if you wanted to know what is the probability you'll get three heads from six coin tosses, the y would be your three. And the p is a half, which is the probability of a head on a fair coin toss, right? And the mean of the binomial distribution is n times p, which would be six coin tosses times one half. So upon infinite replications of that experiment of six coin tosses, you would get three heads. Well, the negative binomial distribution is closely related to this, but instead of telling you how many heads you would get, it tells you on which coin toss you'll get the first head, and on which coin toss you'll get the second head, and on which coin toss you'll get the third head. So by extension here, R is the coin toss in which you get, say, the third head, and Y is the number of coin tosses. P is still a half. And the mean of this distribution is R divided by P. So if you want to know the probability of a third head, in infinite replications of it, it's going to be 3 divided by a half, which is 6. So it has mean 6. On average, you need to do 6 coin tosses to get 3 heads. Okay? So this appeals to me because this is how I think about injuries. Like, you know, occasionally, and Anna, you can stop listening. Occasionally I forget my bike helmet. I leave my bike helmet at home and I'm going, should I, you know, walk across campus for my traumatic brain injury meetings? Or is it safe to ride my bike without my bike helmet? And I go, okay, I can probably do it once or twice and get away with it over the course of a year, right? So, you know, I make that ride, and of course that's the day that I have to dodge cars and pedestrians. So this is the concept, I think, of injury. You can do, you can take a risk a couple of times, but the odds are building against you the more you do it. So I think it's a natural kind of probability distribution for injury. This is probably that you get injured on the arth riskiest behavior. For those who want to know the extension of this to Poisson regression, this is it laid out here. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it sort of, what we're doing in negative binomial regression is actually chaining together the regular Poisson regression models using a gamma distribution. We can go at that point later on if you're interested. So here's my example from the NCAA's injury surveillance system, which is a great injury surveillance system extending back now nearly two decades, providing useful data that's led to a lot of interventions to reduce risk of injury and related conditions among athletes in the NCAA. Using that data, I'm modeling the injury rate here, and I'm trying to predict it as a function of whether they're male or female, just looking at soccer. I've got a linear trend for year. I'm interested in whether the rate of injury is greater in games than in practices. And then we've got other things in the model to account for other types of variation, division, and time of season. And this, the thing that's not in the model is an athlete identifier or a school identifier. So this data is aggregated or collapsed or tabulated across multiple schools. And you could break it down further, but often in analyses like this, we aggregate because it prevents us. We get into other types of regression problems if we break it down too far. So we're going to fit a couple of models on this data. The first model is just a regular Poisson regression. And then the other models, which ignores over-dispersion, and the other models are different approaches to resolving the over-dispersion. I'm going to go quickly through this. So in this first model regular Poisson regression, I'm using SAS and PROC-GENMOD here. We specify the Poisson regression model, and the first thing out of the model straight away tells us, sorry, those are my bones, tells us, as you can see here, there's significant over-dispersion in this model because that's much greater than 1, that quantity there, the 3.9. We would like for this number to be tracking about 1, and here it's tracking about 4. Okay. from this model. Okay, the problem here is these confidence intervals are falsely narrow. So, going to a different model, this is the workaround scale-up model, in which we fit the model and then adjust the standard errors after we do the modeling. Now we've adjusted these standard errors, this comes to a nice number of 1, which is what we want it to be. If we fit that model, we've got about the same estimate of the rate ratio, and our confidence interval got a little bit wider. There's a summary table at the end where you can compare all these things. So that's Poisson regression, and this is Poisson regression patch-up. Now, in models 3 and 4, I was exploring this negative binomial model. And the first one is this NB2 model, which is the default in GenMod here. Also implemented in CountRed, which is something experimental that Harry has put out. And this model really is wonderful at soaking up over dispersion. So now in this table, these things are like around 1.2 and around, well, these things are 1.2 and 1.1. So a vast improvement over the 4 that original Poisson regression gave us. So this negative binomial model does a great job of soaking up this over dispersion, but there's a catch coming up. And it estimates that using this alpha parameter, this is the quadratic, the NB2 model. And that thing, you know, it has a confidence interval that doesn't include 0, so it sort of looks like, hey, there's something going on here, it really is over dispersed data. But when we come to look at the rate ratio, instead of 5.5, it's down to 4.9. So I was disappointed because I was expecting to get the same rate ratio from negative binomial regression that I got from Poisson regression, and it turns out you do not. Because what's happening in negative binomial regression is variability in the denominator counts gets incorporated into the estimate of the rate ratio. So this is a bit of a knock against the model here. However, as you can see, it did correctly widen the confidence intervals, but it seems to have underestimated the rate ratio. So I've got a good confidence interval, but a rate ratio that's too low. This is the NB1 model, and notice how it's giving us an estimate of over-dispersion that's very similar to the scaled Poisson regression model, around 4. And again, some answers. This is from Prop Count Reg. It doesn't have an estimate statement, so I'm doing things in Excel here. And that NB1 produces a rate ratio of 5.4, which is closer to what Poisson gave us and closer to what we think it should be. So here's the summary table. You know, Poisson, we think the rate ratio should be around 5.5. And we get that from Poisson regression, and we get that something like that from NB1, but NB2 is way off the mark. However, NB2 is probably giving us the better confidence interval, right? This is the widest confidence interval. So, you know, I really want this confidence interval, but this rate ratio is a bit of a nuisance, and NB1 sort of sits somewhere in between them. So your best approach is, my recommendation is, let's all do some more work on this and see if we can get it there in the end. But, you know, NB1 or just simple scale Poisson, the patch-up to the Poisson regression, seems to work pretty well. NB2 I would have some concern about, unless I was confident it was giving rate ratios that were credible. The rate ratios from this model are definitely incorrect. So why bother with all of this? Well, I should mention there's some other approaches to this, like fitting random intercepts to the model, and also this compound process developed by Office of Statistics and Programming in the NCIPC, developed specifically for use with NVDRS, this compound Poisson process, which is sort of like a non-modeling approach that's much more general than what I laid out here. Why bother with all of this? Well, you know, I think Dr. Baranski had it right when he said, you know, knowledge just isn't something you go out and compile. It's not a supermarket. You don't just throw things in there. We have a responsibility for what we do, and it's a responsibility to be ethical and to be able to face ourselves in the morning. So as scientists, I think we have a responsibility to get it right, and this is should be part of our commitment to getting it right. That's my feeling. Okay, thanks. Sorry. So I think the question is, why not use GEEs as a workaround for this? GEEs would be another, I should have put that on my list of alternative approaches. GEEs would be another alternative approach. I mean, I'd sooner go with the random intercepts idea in this day and age, because GEEs were kind of like, I mean, that was thrilling 20 years ago. But it's just a two-level model, and I think, yeah, GEEs are one option. Random effects or mixed models, I'd sooner do that than GEEs. So, yeah, I'm not making much use of GEEs these days. They were great when they came out. That was the mid-80s. I can remember it. You used to have to email Kareem and get this macro. It was great. So there was another question. Maybe not. Well, you could, the same techniques could be used to control for under dispersion. I think the question you have to ask yourself is, do I have a right to shrink that confidence interval? And, you know, in something like NVDRS data, you know, I can't even tell you what the confidence interval means. Having spent 20 minutes telling you I don't know how to estimate it, I'm not going to tell you I don't even know what it is. So, I mean, you know, the errors in surveillance systems result from coding errors or deterministic sorts of error, medical examiners who don't put things in right, rather than from random fluctuations. So I think we need to examine the whole concept of these confidence intervals as markers of imprecision, rather than as, I'm not sure that I'm in favor of shrinking them down. I think we should be trying to make them wider, not smaller.